In the last couple lectures, we've learned about basic ideas of quantum computing, universality. We've talked about implementation. We've talked about complexity theory. So now we're going to turn around and say, what do we do with quantum computers? And I'm going to talk about two algorithms. Today, we'll talk about factoring. And tomorrow, we'll talk about Grover, which is a searching algorithm. And then next week, we'll look at open quantum systems, and then error correction, QKD. And if there's something you want to learn about, I could try to work out something. So I'm happy to have some suggestion. If I know about the subject, I'll talk about it. If I don't know, then I can try to find out something about it. And maybe at some point on Friday, we could have open questions of coming back and different things. And if something doesn't either make sense or kind of on the boundary of what I've talked about. But today we're going to talk about factoring. So the basic idea of what we're interested in here is, suppose that I give you a number n, which is the product of two prime numbers. I give you n, and then you have to spit out p and q. Example of this, if I give you 15, sorry, you guys should know this, come on. Now, if I give you 2,701, so one day I gave a talk and they were with geeks in the class and they were kind of Googling it, and it's 37 by 73. And if I get to larger and larger number, it becomes harder and harder. And so this is one of the problems in these complexity class. We don't know if it's in the NP class or if it's in the P, but we don't have a classical algorithm, which is polynomial. In fact, the best algorithm that we have is exponential of 1.9 log of n to the power 1/3 log of n to the power 2/3. Okay? And you can calculate how is this as you go higher. But let's do a small thing. There's an easy algorithm to try to factor. You're going to try 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I want to give you a feeling of how long does it take if you have a number with n, a number n with log of n digits. So let's make a small thing. But before I go there, I'll point out to you, and I think most of you probably know this, that this difficulty of solving this problem is behind the difficulty of solving the cryptography that you're using on the internet. So I'll give you the protocol in a few minutes, but essentially, if you can find P and Q and get N, then all your transactions on the internet, pretty much all, are insecure. And I'm saying pretty much all because there's another algorithm which is different than this, which doesn't rely on factoring, but on finding zeros of a curve, called elliptic curves. In the last 10 years, the cryptographical world has been moving from RSA to elliptic curve because elliptic curve doesn't take as much resources to compute. It's not an exponential difference between two, but it's slightly better. In fact, it's the smartphone industry has really pushed elliptic curve because there you didn't want to use too much of your battery to kind of just decrypting the messages from one to the other. Now, interestingly, last summer, on the website of the National Security Agency in the US, they have this comment which kind of surprised many people. They said, we have advised our kind of providers of cryptography to move from RSA to elliptic curve for the last 10 years. Now we ask them to stop, and because we want to move from elliptic curve or an RSA to what is called quantum safe, which will be resilient to quantum computation. Now, behind this is an incredible good what's the word? Not sponsorship, but a demonstration that the National Security Agency in the US is worried about quantum computers. So they believe it's going to happen. Because if they didn't believe it happened, they wouldn't say to all the crypto providers in the world to kind of, or in the US to kind of focus on something which is not there at the curve. So that's quite an interesting. So the work on this has an impact and they're going to tell you on you. And it tells you that what you're exchanging on the internet today is probably going to be, even if it's encrypted using this RSA and this factoring problem, will be decrypted in the future. If somebody takes your message and keep them on the side, then you'll be able to do so. I'll explain in a few minutes how to do that. But let's look at, you know, there's a, this algorithm to do that takes this, the best algorithm. It's called the probability sieve. But let's assume that we don't use this, we use a dumb algorithm. Well, you know that you don't have to divide by two. Because if you divide, or even numbers, because then it would be really easy. Because you, if n is even, it's pretty easy to factor. So you know that n is odd. So you already you don't have to look at all those, but you'll look at 1, 3, 5, 7, 11. Okay? If you look at how many bits the encryption is using today, it's either 1,028 or 2,056. So let's assume that we have numbers which have 1,028 bits, okay? So that's about 300 digit, okay? And let's assume that so 300 digits, so the number of steps that you have to do will go to like 10 to the 300 to be able to factor all these numbers. Let's assuming that one step to check if 3 is a factor or 5 is a number, 7 is a number, 11. Okay? Let's assume that we have computers which are a little bit works at gigahertz. So gigahertz is 10 to the minus 9 seconds or 10 to 9, it does 10 to 9 operation per second. If you have 10 to the 9 ops per second, and you're thinking, okay, how many years will that take? Or in a year, how many seconds do we have? So you take 360 by 24 by 60 by 60. And if my computation is right, you should get about 3 by 10 to the 7 second per year. How old is the universe? You're a theoretical physicist. You should know that. 13 and a half. That's pretty good. I was happy that you didn't say minus 400 or 4,567 with that somebody who thinks that some religious sect thinks about 4,000 years. It's about, we believe it's about 10 billion years. So if you multiply by this, you get 10 billion years. It's 10 to the 10 years. So 10 to the 17. Multiplied by this is 10 to the 23, 24, but you have 10 to the 300 operations. So if you do it the dumb way, there's no way you're going to do this. If you go back to this, I think in, or I could go back and say, I went to look in the web, what is the largest number product of primes that have been factored? So there's a company called RSA that does this encryption, and they put challenge in the community. They give people thousands of dollars if they factor this number or that number. And it is their way to track how fast people can do. So I think you can get $25,000 if you factor a number with 200 bits. And with this algorithm, I think in 2010, it was 232 digits, so 1,000 bits. And that took about 2,000 computers which were running at gigahertz. So if you add number of bits, it doubles the effort and then becomes very hard. So people use about this encryption today, and they're moving to 2056 to make it more secure. But the day that we have quantum computers, then this is not going to work. So how does the encryption work? So you are on the internet and you want to connect to your bank. And there is either you have a secret key that you have exchanged before. This is called a symmetric key. But it's not very useful if you want to go to the internet because you would have to exchange the key before. So there's a scheme called public key cryptography using this math problem to encode. And here's how it works. So Alice is the banker. Bob is the customer who wants to kind of get something. So Alice at the bank, she gets a request from one of you guys saying, I want to connect securely. So she chooses, she has a data bank with P and Q, multiply by them, and get N. Okay? So in order to make it a little concrete so that you understand the different parts, she's gonna take P and Q is equal to 5 and 3. So because it's very small, there's a few things that is not going to work in curly well, but at least you'll see how the computation works. So she takes 3 and 5, she multiplies them, she has 15. Now, this is step number one. Step number two, she chooses, Alice chooses a number E such that E is greater than 1, but smaller than phi of N, which is equal to P minus 1, Q minus 1. So we have 5 and 3, so that means 4 times 2, which is equal to 8. Okay. So she chooses a number at random. And I'm going to say that she chose 7. Okay. 3, she computes D is equal to E to the minus 1 mod 5n. So this is modulo addition and multiplication. So I assume that you remember how to do this. Okay? Or this is equivalent to saying E times D is equal to 1 mod 5n. Okay, so we have E is equal to 7. Phi is equal to 8. So 7 times D is equal to 1 mod 8. Okay? So 1, if I put D is equal to 1, 7, wrong. 2, 14. 14 modulo 8, it's 6, wrong. 3, 3 times 7, 21 modulo 8 gives you 5. Doesn't work. And it'll continue, and you'll find that D is equal to 7. 7 times 7 is 49. 49 is divided by 8. It's kind of remnant is 1. So here's the number. So D is equal to 7. Now, usually if you take large numbers, they would not be equal to each other. That's why I said this was small things. 4. We're going to call the public key E and N, and the private key D and N. Okay? So what Alice is going to send to Bob is E and N, so 7 and 15. And in her case, she keeps as a private key 7 and 15. So the fact that they are the same is bad. But in general, these things will be different. And if you know E, it's very hard to find what D is. It turns out that it's as hard as finding the prime number. Okay? Bob receives E and N. He receives E and N, which is 7 and 15. And then he encrypts his message. So his message is a number M, and which is bits of strings or belongs to Zn. And I'm going to take his message to be equal to 3. I'm taking a small number because we're going to multiply things, and then if they're bigger, it becomes much, much harder. Okay? And the encryption C is equal to M to the power E mod N. Okay? And in fact, I've put a small n here, and I'm just realizing this small n is equal to this big N. Okay, so keep this in mind. At some point, I might call n the log of this big number. And we talked about complexity yesterday. I told you that you have to have a size of the input. The size of the input on this problem is not the big N, but the log of this big N. Okay, because it's the number of digit that describes this. Okay, so we encrypt this. So 3 to the power 7 mod 15. Okay, it's equal to 2,187 mod 15. And this is equal to 12. So she sends back 12 with a tag of saying, I'm Bob, you send me E and N. And then she gets back and says, oh yeah, I sent to Bob E, N, and then he sent me 12. And it turns out that the decryption okay. Alice computes the encrypted message D mod N, which is equal to E to M to the ED mod N. And the claim is that this should be the message. And so 12 to the power 7 mod 15. I have to go and look at my cheat sheet because this number becomes large. And so you get that this is 35,831,808 mod 15, and if you divide this, you get 2,238,887.2. 0.2 is the remnant, which is give you the mod. 0.2 multiplied by 15 is equal to 3. So you got this back. Okay. Now you know how this piece of the internet works. So this is the basic idea of how it works. You compute these functions, and there's all a piece of mathematics behind all the why this all works and how it's related to the factoring in there, like finding D and N if you have E and N is as difficult as finding the factor of these numbers. Okay, so this is how does that work, and what I want to do today is show you how a quantum algorithm is able to break this. And factoring it's not a new problem, it's an old one. And people have thought about it for quite a lot of time. And it turns out that factoring, finding P and Q, is equivalent to what is called order finding. And there was some number theorist in the 70s who found this. So what is order finding? So the order of an integer A mod N is the smallest r such that A to the r mod N is equal to 1. Okay? So let's look at our example again. N is equal to 15. Let's choose a is equal to 2, so it's not, we can nearly do this by heart. So we have mod n. So if we have 2 to the power 1, it's equal to 2, all mod n. 2 to the power 2 is equal to 4 mod n. 2 to the power 3 is 8 mod 15, it's still equal to 8. 2 to the power 4 is equal to 16, equal to 1 mod n. So here, the order r is equal to 4. Okay? Now, if you make a plot, of a to the r mod n as a function, so a to the x mod n as a function of x, you realize that it's 2, 4, 8, 1, 2, 4, 8, 1, 2, 4, 8, et cetera, as a function of n. You realize that this function is periodic. So you're changing a problem with finding this factor to another function which is periodic. And it turns out that quantum computers are good at finding periods. And so that's the basic idea behind Shor's algorithm. Try to find the period of this function here, a to the dx mod n. And then once you have this function with this period, then essentially you get the number. The factors. Why is that? Because let's assume that r is even. And it turns out that number theory people will tell you that if you choose a pretty much at random, half of the time r is even, so half of the time r is odd, roughly. There's the number that comes in. If r is odd, the algorithm is not going to work. Okay? And you'll realize that you'll get something at the end, it won't factor the number. So this problem is a little bit like an NP problem in that sense that if I give you, it's hard to factor, but if I give you a number, if I give you 7 to factor 15, it's pretty easy to say it works or not. So if r is odd, it doesn't work. But if r is even, then you have that a to the r minus 1 mod n is equal to 0. And this you can divide it in 2. Okay, which tells you that this is equal to 0, or this is equal to 0. Okay, and then if you have a and you have r, then you get the numbers which are the primes. Okay, so in the case that we have here, we had a is equal to 2, okay, and r is equal to 4, and 4 is even. 4 divided by 2 is 2, 2 minus 2 is equal to 3. So you get that this number is such that we get this thing. So we know that 3 is one of the factors. Okay. So what's the basic idea of the quantum algorithm? Take two registers. And these, I put them as 0, 0, and I'm really thinking about the strings of bits in each of them. Okay? So, and I think I need 2 times the log of big N on each of them, or here, and twice in there. But roughly, the number of bits in there will be log of this big N. Step number one. I'm going to transform this so that I get here the sum of 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 plus 6 plus 7 up to n. How do we do this? That's it. You do add mr to each qubit, and I'm going to write it the function this way. So now I'm not thinking in binary anymore. But I want to have the sum of 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4. And if I bring it down and down, I can do this. And to get to big N, as you remember of one of the first exercises, you need only log of N, number of qubit. So that's good. Okay. The second step is to calculate this function, which looks like this. Okay, so.
Assumption between infinity or to N?
You what?
You mean the sum is to N, right?
And I'm gonna put a little twiggle of N. This small detail to increase the probability and things like this. So it's of roughly of this order N. And I could go and pick up all the little details in here. They would take me two lectures to explain all the details. So I'm gonna give you most the big idea. And then you can go and look in the KLM book or another paper that gives you all the small detail number there. So the next piece is to go and calculate this function A to dx. Mod n. Okay? And I'll come back to this in a few seconds. Okay? Let's suppose that we have this now this function of x that we can calculate. You want to be sure that it doesn't take too much effort to do this. And I'll kind of convince you without kind of going and cross all the T's and the I's. But now you remember that this thing here, that this is periodic. So this term here has a periodicity. And when you look at it, he says, what happened if I measure this thing here? So this, in the example here, was equal to 1, 2, 4, 8, 1, 2, 4, 8. Okay? So if I measure, I'm going to take, let's say I end up with 4. I'll take a piece of the x here, which corresponds to the 4, but there's many x's, which will give me 4. So second register. And I'm going to get the sum. I'm going to call this from 0 to m of z r plus x0. In the second register, I have ax0 mod n. So this thing is always the same thing. And this one now, the sum is not over all the numbers, but a subset of them. And m is related to n and r, right? So because I have to stop at some point, so there's m times I can have r in there. And so this thing is now this thing which is periodic. And can we find the period? So the first idea, so we want to find what is this r here. Now, we're nearly there, except that the piece which is not that great is that we have an x0 in here. So we can look at this graph. I'm going to rewrite it in a slightly different way. The sum. So we have this a x0 mod m. We've picked up one value which corresponds to x0, to some, this is x0, or the distance here is x0. And then the next one is, this is x0. There's an r distance between the two. And so this is r plus x0. The next one will be 2r plus x0, and we go and do this. So we'd get this, but we don't, x0 can be anything. So if we just go and measure one piece in here, let's say you'll get something here, you don't know what's the coefficient here, and you don't know what the x0 here. Well, you can go and measure it again, and maybe you can do, but because this x0 is going to change from time to time, it doesn't help. So we need to find a way to get rid of this x0. And you can do this by something which is called a Fourier transform. So there's a Fourier transform. OK. Which will give me something which is proportional to only this. And from this, you get the thing. So what I'm going to do in the next few minutes is first tell you a little bit of how you calculate this with one point I want to mention, and then we'll go and explain the Fourier transform. Yep. Turns out that the classical Fourier transform on a state space which is of that size is very large. It goes, the number of effort is, would go like n squared. Okay. But when you do a Fourier transform, there's a bunch of small phases that you can neglect some of them. And there's something called the fast Fourier transform. And the fast Fourier transform, which are classical, is like log of n multiplied by n. So not good. So if I would be in this form, then I would be out, and you guys could say this is not useful. But the quantum Fourier transform goes like log of n. And so squared. And so that's polynomial. And so we'll go and explain this. But before I go there, I want to go back to this. Now, we're exponentiating this, some power which can go up to n. So if I multiply them in the dumb way, so I give you at some point in the superposition of all these states, I'll be at n over 2, and I have to calculate a to the n over 2. And if doing it by a multiplied by a by a, that'll take me a n over 2, capital N over 2 effort, not good. So how do we calculate this efficiently? So the trick is you're going to calculate a to the power 0, a to the power 1, a to the power 2, a to the power 4, a to the power 8, a to the power 16, and then calculating this is only log of capital N, number of multiplication. And when you want to have something which is in the middle of this, then you just add some of this. And you can show with this that it's not an exponential amount of effort. You can do it in polynomial. Now, exactly how do you multiply this? I'm not going to show you the circuit. In one of your exercises, you add a circuit of how you add to number binaries. So there's similar circuits to multiply, and this is all classical, so you can go and look in classical literature if you really want to know exactly how it works. I'm not sure I've ever gone through. I believe my classical colleagues that they can do this, multiply efficiently. At least my head can do it, so the computer should be able to do it. Okay. I'm not sure if I'm a classical computer or not. So, the next thing I want to do is just go through the quantum Fourier transform. I'm thinking which diagram, which blackboard I want to. And I want to keep this not too far, because at the end I want to go back and think about what does this algorithm do, and why is it kind of, there's a piece which is surprising and very neat, which tells us quantum computing do some things. And how it happens. So, the quantum Fourier transform. So, I'm going to call this quantum Fourier transform to a small n on a state x. Okay, it's transformed to a state which is that form, sum over y equal to 0, 2 to the n minus 1. E to the 2 pi I x y divided by 2 to the n and y. So at some point I will think about y as bits, sometimes as just the number 1, 2, 3 up, 2 to the minus. So right now I'm thinking it as 1, 2, 3 up to n. So this looks like the Fourier transform that you must have seen somewhere as an undergrad. And we want to go and find this. So this quantum operation, in some sense, is something which would look like this in general. Okay? So we want to do this quantum Fourier transform, okay, on the state that we've put here. And there should have been a normalization on there. There's m of these states. So it's 1 over square root of m Fourier transform. put a dot operate on the state sum over z equal to 0 to m zr plus x0. And I'm going to drop that part here because it's the same everywhere. And I could add it here, but this quantum transform doesn't happen on it, and I'm just going to. OK, so I'm looking at this definition, 2 to the power n over 2, sum over y equal to 0 to 2n minus 1, sum over z equal to 0 to m, e to the 2 pi I, z r plus x0, y to the power 2n, multiplying by y. OK? And now, this part here doesn't depend on z, so I can take it out of there. So we get 1 over 2 power to the n, sum over y, e to the 2 pi I x0 y 2 to the n, which multiply sum of z equal to 0 to the m e to the 2 pi I z r y divided by 2 to the n multiplied by y. OK? And what we're going to do now is go and measure y. And if we measure y, we get 1 of the y out of there. And you realize that now the part which is in terms of x0 is just a global phase. So that part goes down. So we're stuck with this piece here. So we get the probability of y, which is equal to 1 over 2 to the n times m, which multiply sum of z is equal to z. Is equal to 0 to m minus 1 e to the 2 pi I z r y to the d n squared. And now I'm going to ask you to remember your Fourier transform. And you remember when you take the Fourier transform and you do the Fourier transform again, you get a bunch of phase that's add up. And suddenly, a lot of terms cancel. And this is what happens in here. If you take a random r, y, and z, and you sum them over a random r and y, the phases in the complex plane are going to cancel with each other. It's only when you have a particular combination of r and y where it works. And it works when y is an integral multiple of 2n over r, or let's say r is equal to 2n k2 to the n over r.
Yeah. Why is the sum now up to minus 1?
I think it's because I started at 0 here.
I guess you also started at 0.
Okay. You're right. OK? So this is not exactly what we still want, because there's a k. But now it's not as bad as what we had before. You can repeat it a few times. And you'll get different values of y. But because you know they are related to k, there is an algorithm. I think it's called the Euclidean algorithm that goes and finds what is r by having a few values of these y, not knowing what k is. Okay, so you can do it. OK? So this is the basic idea. The last thing I want to do in the next 10, 15 minutes is to show you how you can do this quantum Fourier transform and to show you what it looks like. And what we want to know is how many gates we're using for that. OK, so we have a state 2 to the n, square root of n, sum of y equal to 0 to the big N, e to the 2 pi I. And this value zr over 2 to the n, I'm going to call it omega right now, y multiplied by y. And really what we want to find in the Fourier transform is what is this omega here. And because we use binary, we're going to write omega, we think about omega as, if it has an integral part, then multiplied by 2 pi, it gives me 1, and it just get, you can forget about it. So it's only the fraction part in binary of omega which counts. And we're going to write this as x2, x3, xn, or n digit of this fraction. Okay? And ideally, what we want to find is what are these x1, x2, up to xn. So let's expand this, okay? What we have, so that you, let's expand this for 2 qubits that goes there. So y is going to go from 0, 1, 2, 3. Okay? So this term will look like e to the 2 pi I, okay, omega which multiplies 0 by the state 0, plus e to the 2 pi omega multiplied by 1, state 1, plus e to the 2 pi I omega multiplied 2 by the state 2, plus e to the 2 pi I omega multiplied 3 by the state 3. Okay, and then you can continue if you wanted to, if you would have your Fourier transform over a larger number of qubits. And now I'm going to rewrite this in terms of binaries, because when I show you my gates, I go back in binaries. So this thing looks like the state 0, 0. Okay? This state here looks like e to the 2 pi I omega, which multiply 2n minus 2, okay, by the state 0, 1, plus e to the 2 pi I omega 2 to the n minus 1, the state 1, 0, plus e to the 2 pi I omega of 2 to the n minus 2 plus 2 to the n minus 1, okay, 1, 1, okay, where n is equal to 2. Okay, so the 1 here goes to 2 to the minus, minus 2. The 2 here is 2 to the n minus 1. I've just multiplied this, and I took 2 as 1, 0, and put it this way. So you might say, why am I doing this? It's because now I can rewrite this as 1 half of 0 plus e to the 2 pi I omega 2 to the n minus 1, 1 for the first qubit, and 0 plus e to the 2 pi I omega 2 to the minus n minus 2, the 1 qubit. So I factorize this in two different parts. Okay? And then if omega is equal to this term here, and you remember we're in binary, so x1 is equal to 0 or 1. Okay? If I multiply this, n is equal to 2, so this number is 2. I multiply this by this omega by 2. The term which corresponding to this will now be becoming an integer, and then it doesn't count anymore, and the x2 is comes to the first part of the decimal. So this is equal to 1, 0, plus e to the 2 pi I, 0.x2. And the other term is 0 plus e to the 2 pi I times 0.x1 dot x1, x2 to the state 1. Okay? N is equal to 2, 2 minus 2 is equal to 1. So here we have exactly the omega we started with, because we have 2 qubits. And here we've bumped the piece by 1. And the goal is to find what is x1, x2, x3, x4. Okay? Pretty much, we have x2 here. I'll just give you the trick of how to find this. Once you have x2, you can rotate that state to get rid of the part here, and then there'll be only x1 left. And then you can use the same trick that you have to go and measure x2. Okay? So how do we measure x2 here? So we have that state. Okay. If x2 is equal to 0, this thing here is going to give me 0 plus 0 times 0, 0.0 is 0, the 0 phase, so I get 1, 0 plus 1. If x2 is equal to 1, 0.1 is a half. It's 1 over 2. Okay? The 2 cancels, e to the I pi is minus 1, and we get 0 minus 1. So if x2 is 0 or 1, we have this state here or that state there. Now we're measuring in the 0 and 1 basis. So what is the operation I need to do to translate this into 0 or 1? That's it. If we do add MR, then we're good. So we'll have a circuit here. Okay? So we take that state here, okay, as the input. We do a hat MR here. And then we'll get x2 here. Okay? So now how do we measure x1? But if you know what x2 is, then you can do something. If x2 is 0, we don't really care about it. You can measure x1 directly. But if x2 is equal to 1, then you can rotate this. So we're going to do a rotation here, a conditional rotation. And what is the rotation that we want to do? Is this is the fraction that is a rotation of e to the 2 pi I divided by 2 to the 2. Okay? So the rotation R2 is something which looks like this. E to the minus 2 pi I, a minus so that it cancels the plus which is here, of 2 over 2. So this is R2. And if we apply this to this state, this little piece of the state comes out, and we're left with x1, which is similar to here. So we do a hat MR, and we get x1. Okay? I'm going to write the circuit for 3 qubits. And then I'll ask you to use induction to find 4-4. So if I do this for 3 qubits, here are the states. That comes in my quantum circuit. Okay. Here I do the LMR. And my claim is that you're going to measure x3 here, x2, x1. So we've learned how to do the first part. R2, H. And then it turns out that the part here is to do a rotation we'll call R3 of your rotation R2 and some other MR. And R3 is like R2, except that instead of having 2 to the square, it'll be 2 to the cube. Okay? And this, if you have a state which has this periodicity of this omega which is there, then you can read omega out of this. which is like a Fourier transform. Yeah. And how many gates? Well, you'll write that there's one here, then there's two, and then here there'll be three, and the next one there'll be four. So you do 1 + 2 + 3 = 4, and this goes like n squared. Okay, so this tells you. So let's go back to what we've done. Factoring seems to be an interesting problem, either if you're a pure math person or if you're a cryptographer. We've learned that you can transfer the idea of factoring into looking at the periodicity of this function here, a to the x mod n. And then we created a state superposition of all the numbers, 0 to n, which is would be very long classically, but because we use this LMR, then we can do this. Then, although it would be incredibly long to calculate a to the x mod n for every value of up to capital n, we can do this in parallel here. We get a function which has this periodicity, okay? And then we measure a piece of it that gives you a hint of what would be this value, and then we do a Fourier transform to get rid of this randomness of where the x0 comes in, and then we can find r, and then you factor your number. But now let's think about what the quantum computer really does. Does it go and compute all these numbers? And I'm going to tease Aggie a little bit. This is the part which is potential, right? Because there's the superposition of all these numbers. If you go and try to measure these things one by one, it'll take you an exponential number of time, but it's in there. But you don't care what are all these values of a to the x mod n. You just need one property of it, its periodicity. And this you can extract using quantum computing. So you cannot know all these values, but you can know a property of the sum of all of them. And this is what quantum computation has done. So when we think about the state alpha 0 plus beta 1, and we say, is it really in all this superposition, or is it really in 0 or 1, and we just don't know about it? But here you're doing something that you just cannot do, or we don't know how to do in the classical world. And then this quantum computer does this in some, I was going to say the word magic, but then it's not really magic. It's that we don't have usually this intuition of doing something where we cannot know as it goes. Like if you, I say to people, it's just like an engine here where yeah, it's running. You cannot look at the hood and look at, does it really does this exactly in all the pieces? If you try to do this, it'll never work. You have to let it go. You cannot look at it, but you can look at it only at the end when you've extracted the property that you have. So it's good to have a smile on your face because it's amazing that it just works the right way. And this is why quantum computing tells us that we have to think about computing in a different way. So I think this is not only an interesting problem which has importance, but I think it's a very good example where things, it make us think about computing in a different way. Yeah. Okay. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about Grover, which is not doesn't have an exponential gain, but again do something that classically we don't know we cannot do. It's not an exponential gain; it's a square root. But in that case, with the Grover algorithm, we know that we cannot do better than a certain amount, and with a quantum, we can do better than this with a square root. Questions?
Is there any criterion for the choice of the A in the algorithm? If we are finding the letter A, the number A, we don't know a priori. We are just given N.
So you choose, in fact, I might not have said, you choose A. And I think there's a restriction from number theory of, so you should not choose A equal to 2. I've done it here. But I think, I could double check. I don't remember exactly. There's a small constraint, but not very much. You just take an A. And sometimes this algorithm is not going to work. But because factoring has this neat property is if it doesn't work, you know, you go back and do it again. You can do it a few times, and then As long as the probability of success is reasonable, not too small, then we can do it. Doesn't grow, doesn't decrease exponentially with the number, the size of number you want to do, then you're good.
So if you get, for example, an R that is not even, then you kind of apply that argument, then you go and search for another A, and try to get
another. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, if you get an R which is odd, you've just been that lucky. Okay. There's a constraint that the greatest common divisor of A and N or there's no greatest common divisor between A and N. And if there is one, then you've solved the problem. So this doesn't happen that often. So you factor. Okay, so see you tomorrow.